Welcome to another episode of The Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes, the storytelling show that features The Clearing, where all good questions come to get asked and all good stories come to be told, and where all my guests have two things in common. They're all creative individuals and all with an interesting story to tell. There are some lovely storytelling metaphors. A clearing, a tree, a juicy storytelling exercise called 5-4-3-2-1, some alchemy, some gold, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, and a cake. So it's all to play for. So yes, welcome to The Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes. Are you sitting comfortably? Then we shall begin. Ladies and gentlemen, men, welcome to a very, very auspicious and exciting day. They all are in the Good Listening To Show clearing. This is the show in which I invite movers, makers, shakers, mavericks, influencers, and also personal heroes into a clearing or serious happy place of my guests' choosing to all share with us their stories of distinction and genius. And this is the Captain Versatility Pants personified, Mr. Nicholas Collett, who's an actor. And he's an actor, director, producer, writer, a living testament to the versatility of what an actor can become using all of their transferable skills. He's also the king of one-man shows and also two-handers that I know you do as well. So you're very, very welcome, Nicholas Collett, to the Good Listening To Show clearing.
Thank you very much for having me, Chris. It's lovely to see you.
Lovely. And that was the sound of one man clapping. No extra charge. You're welcome. But obviously there are billions watching as we broadcast live across the globe. Marvellous. Just to blow some extra happy smoke at you, we have the Bristol Old Vic Theatre School in common, in that we're both alumni, and we both left with the, I think it was the Peter Ackerman, I Think You'll Find, Comedy Prize.
Newton Blick when I got it.
So same difference. It means that we're both gifted comically, shall we say.
Let's hope so.
Also, we did a tour together, and I know that you're on tour at the moment. We're going to talk about Ghost of a Smile that's happening in North Nibley.
Indeed.
I love the comedy of locations where rural touring shows go to. I once did a show probably with you in Upton cum Kexby.
Yes.
And also, thanks to you, I've been to Kinlochbevie in Scotland. Do you remember going there?
I do, yes.
That was Marvellous. Back in the day when we were on tour with the Medieval Players doing a show called Courage, way back when.
Yes, indeed. And we saw seals in the harbour.
We did. And I'm glad you remember. That's awesome. So you've been on my radar for quite some time to bring you into the clearing, because I perceive you quite rightly as being a natural born storyteller, a very gifted clown and comic actor. If you lived in Bristol, I'm sure you'd be in Instant Wit, my comedy improvisation company that I co-run with a wonderful person called Stephanie Weston. But I'm really, really excited to have you here. First of all, how's morale and what's your story of the day, please, Nicholas Collett?
Morale is good. I am currently working with my dear friend and colleague, Gavin Robertson, with my director hat on at the moment, as we push towards opening his new solo show, Is That a Whip in Your Hand? Which is, for the sake of clarity, it is a spoof of Indiana Jones, Romancing the Stone, National Treasure, any sort of big adventure movie that you can think of.
I'm so happy it's not a sort of BDSM dungeon or something. That's all great.
I'm sure quite a lot of your listeners, if they're of a certain age, would remember Thunderbirds FAB.
I was going to mention that. I saw that at the Edinburgh Festival. I hold him and his puppeteering mime in very high regard. I think amazing.
Yeah, so that's the kind of the flavour of the show. So we're opening that tomorrow at the Old Laundry Theatre at Bowness on Windermere.
So if people don't have a frame of reference, I know I've already blown some happy smoke at you, but what's your favourite way of avoiding or answering the question when someone says, oh, hello, what do you do? So how would you describe yourself, Nicholas?
I always say I'm an actor, because principally that's what I do. But as you mentioned, I do other stuff as well. So I do produce, I do direct, and I do write. And sometimes I do one of them and sometimes I do all of them.
And Waiting for Hamlet is a lovely title of one of your shows, and that's an informal audience with Shakespeare in the pub, which I think is just such a lovely premise.
Ah, these are two separate things.
Ah,
Waiting for Hamlet is a play that I do with my dear friend Tim Marriott. The show that I do about Will in the pub is called Your Bard.
Ah, I love that. That's pub landlord right there, Your Bard. I see what you're doing there.
Yeah, so that's the show that I wrote in 2016.
Yeah.
But some time ago now, that was kind of like a really lucky break. Gavin and I were offered a place on a writing retreat in Florida. So we went off to Seaside in Florida, which is sort of at the top of the panhandle, nestled between Panama City and Destin. For reference, it's where they shot The Truman Show with Jim Carrey.
Yes, yes.
So we were there for 4 weeks, and our brief was basically write something. And I had wanted to write a piece about Shakespeare for some time. And my wife, Lorraine, came up with the title. So once I had that and the context of it being in a pub, I was kind of off and away. So I wanted to write something where Shakespeare kind of says, actually, as for all these conspiracy theories, no, I actually did write them.
Yes, to get rid of all that conspiracy theory nonsense, it was me. I did.
It was me. There's quite a lot in there about his family, about Hamlet particularly, and about touring. And of course, touring is very much an analogue art form and hasn't really changed in, I don't know, however long people have been touring.
Yes.
Certainly during Shakespeare's time.
And that's so relatable. The Upton Cumkexbys of the world, it's like you turn up to a dark space and then a light goes on, and like moths to a flame, people arrive. I mean, even in Con Like a Bevy, we were riffing back in there that, you know, there'd be a couple of sheep and a stoat watching, but about sort of 50 or 60 people turn up from all parts of the darkness.
They do.
Fantastic.
They do. It is an amazing experience.
And if I may, it makes you an even more quintessential sort of touring minstrel, because you're turning up with really versatile stuff. I mean, your one-man show, two-man show canon is pretty extraordinary. You're doing one called Spitfire Solo, which you've reintroduced to your canon recently, haven't you?
Yes. Yes, Spitfire's doing some stuff, hopefully doing some more dates next year. Metal is the show that I just started doing.
Yeah.
And Metal is about my dad's service on the Atlantic convoys. Like a lot of people, my dad didn't really talk about his service. On my parents' golden wedding anniversary, my sister and I turned up to surprise them. And we had a boozy lunch. And then my dad took me into the dining room at the back of the house, told me to sit down. I've got some things to tell you. And he opened up and he told me some stories about his time in the Navy. And some of it was very funny, and some of it was heartbreaking. But I kind of banked the stories. We didn't talk about it much after that. And then much later on...
The timing, that's extraordinary. There was just suddenly a need to overspill, it would seem.
Just to sort of let me know. And years later, when I spoke to couple of guys who've also been in the Navy about why he did that, one of them told me that he thought my dad was giving me permission, which I found really interesting. And in fact, I hadn't really entertained any thought of, obviously I'd banked the stories in the back of my mind, but when my dad died in 2018 and my sister got his service records, I thought I could write something which would be my tribute to him, but also a conversation starter. And it's been extraordinary, the number of people coming up after the show who want to share their stories, who tell me that it's really resonated, that it's so important that we preserve these stories. And of course, a lot of them have disappeared. They may exist in the form of a memory because they have told somebody, a loved one, about a certain experience, but the stories just sort of disappear. So my main kind of mission, although of course it is a bit late in the day because a lot of the people from the Second World War have already died, but to try to get people to record these stories if they can. Yes.
There's two things that I'd like to talk to you about that. The idea of metal as a title, is that test of your metal in terms of mental health and resilience, or is it the clanging ships of the metal infrastructure of the Navy?
Well, it's sort of meant to be a little sort of reference to both. The title is metal as in your strength of character. But as you know, I'm from Sheffield. My dad worked in the steelworks.
Oh, gosh, yes.
So this is a kind of an aural pun, I suppose.
Aural pun, lovely. And also, the other thing I wanted to mention, because of your show, Waiting for Hamlet, what you're giving testament there to is the line in Hamlet, to show as 'twere the mirror up to nature, which is the power of storytelling in any case, and the fact that you're bearing witness to what your dad gave you permission to do is wonderful, I think.
Yes, it's my tribute to my dad, because there's more to unpick in the show if people want to come and see it. But the holding the mirror up to nature is a line that I use in Your Bard, which is all about what Will did. It's the essence, I think. It's the kernel of his work. So, yeah, it's been a very interesting journey, and it's been exciting, painful,
cathartic as well, I don't doubt.
Comic and heartbreaking, at times very confusing, and sometimes illuminating. So, yeah.
A testament to your art in the golden thread of storytelling and keeping narratives and stories alive and keeping narratives current and present as well, even though they're in the past. Wonderful. So, Nick, it's my great pleasure and delight to be able to now curate you through the storyscape of the Good Listening To show. You're giving me loads of gold in any case, but there's going to be a clearing, a tree, a lovely juicy storytelling exercise called 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. There's going to be some alchemy, some gold, a couple of random squirrels, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare and a cake. So Shakespeare is being reincorporated. See what I'm doing there? It's not a memory test. So I'm going to curate you through it. You've given me some of it anyway already, but let's get you into the structure of it. So coming back to, first of all, the founding premise of the energetic hub is the clearing or the serious happy place of your choosing. So where would you say Nicholas Collett, actor, writer, director, producer, where is your clearing? Where do you go to get clutter-free, inspirational and able to think?
Okay, I live in Hastings. I'm in a delightful part of the world on the south coast, which is crammed full of history. And we're very lucky where we live because we have the Hastings Country Park, which extends for about 8.5 miles. But there is a place called the Fire Hills, which is part of the country park. And it's quite hilly. It looks, the sea is open completely along the coast. So you get a magnificent view. You can see all the way from Hastings right across the Dungeness. And during lockdown, when we didn't have any shipping or any other sort of pollution going on, we could quite clearly see across to France. If I go there, it's the sky, it's the sea, it's the openness, and it really helps me just clear away and just to be able to sort of think straight. So that's my happy place.
So Fire Hill on the coastline of Hastings.
Cool.
Marvellous.
UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
Anyway, okay, that's your clearing, Fire Hill in Hastings. Now I'm going to arrive with a tree in your clearing, and hopefully you're going to enjoy this because it's a bit deliberately existentially Waiting for Godot-esque, a bit Beckett-y. So I'm going to shake your tree now to see which storytelling apples fall out. How'd you like these apples? A couple of comedy props for you. So this is where you've been kind enough to have thought about four things that have shaped you.
Yeah,
let's call it three things that inspire you, two things that never fail to grab your attention, and then a quirky or unusual fact about you we couldn't possibly know about you until you tell us. Mm. So over to you.
Okay. Well, I think I'm going to start with my parents. They were real salt-of-the-earth people, but they had a tremendous work ethic. My dad was a steel worker. My mum was a housewife who did other jobs as well. I mean, if being a housewife isn't enough of a job, it really is full time. And I think what's the most important thing was that my mum and dad always encouraged me to not just do my best. They always said, if you do your best, we'll never have any cause to have a go at you. But they really encouraged me to do what I wanted to do. So when I was about, I did plays at junior school, and my mum saw something there. When I was about 11, my dad actually saw an article in the Sheffield Star, and it was a local amateur operatic society who were looking for chorus for Oliver. And this was the other side of Sheffield. So my dad drove me there. I went in, did the audition. He drove me home. And I got offered The Artful Dodger.
I knew you were going to say that. How extraordinary. Yep. That makes sense in terms of casting.
And then I got the chance to go to university. I went to university first. And then when I came out...
Birmingham, wasn't it?
That's right. And then when I was coming out of university, I got offered a place at Bristol. But I got offered the two-year course and not the postgrad. So all of a sudden, I had to find kind of like another year's fees and another way of keeping myself alive for another year. So I worked really hard during that summer. I was working like 2-3 pubs, not getting much sleep, but just kind of pushing. I was just at the point where, well, I got some help. Chris Dennis at the theatre school said, you know, we can get you work at the theatre. You know, come, we'll make it work. But I was just calling home and my dad said, listen, I've taken early retirement, so don't worry, we'll sort it. That was a big deal for me. My dad knew that the steel industry was kind of like in peril anyway.
Yeah.
But it was a massive step. But he always told me that he never, ever regretted it. And he said, you know, to be able to sort of watch me grow in my career was, you know, a good thing. And my mum too, not just my dad.
Well, wonderful parents, if I may plant that.
Yes, and they gave me that kind of, I mean, people are saying that, you know, why are you still doing all this? Because I love it.
Yes, that's really clear.
And I want to do it, you know. And there's so much still to do that I haven't done yet. So I just have to keep going.
And keep on keeping on, because you're keeping going with a wonderful canon of really important stuff. So this is great. Love that. And also, is your mum still with us?
No. My mum died in 2007. Dad died in 2018. Bless them. So I suppose tied in with that, the next bit for me is education. And the people who have inspired me on that part of my journey. So that starts with my drama teacher, Dave Dawson, back in Rowlandson in Sheffield. Dave was the first person who sort of said to me, there's this thing called the National Youth Theatre. Have you ever thought of applying for it? And he'd actually got a form. So I took the form home, filled it in and sent it off. And I got an audition in Manchester to do the junior short course in 1975. And again, you know, I was thinking, oh, God, Manchester. And Dad said, Carl, drive you. And I got in. And I think that was sort of one of those pivotal moments where you suddenly think, I really like doing this and I kind of feel at home when I'm doing it. So maybe I should just do this. And then the next stage of education is university, and my tutors there, a couple of whom I'm still in touch with.
Is Dave Dawson still with us, your original drama teacher?
I don't know. I did lose touch with Dave, but, you know.
How wonderful to position him as being the one that gave you the form. That's so wonderful, isn't it, that doors on lubricated hinges open sometimes when someone just...
You'd think it's the smallest thing, wouldn't you? But in fact, it's...
Changed
really
life.
It really did. Yeah. Life-changing. Doors opening. I'm still in touch with a lot of my university chums and still in touch with all the people at Bristol, you know, who are still about. And then I think The next bit of this is really to do with it shaping me is my time in the theatre and the people that I've been fortunate enough to work with. When I started, I was doing fortnightly repertory in Basingstoke at the Haymarket Theatre. And my first governor was a guy called Ian Mullins.
And I remember, yes.
Yeah. And Ian, I remember the first time I went in to do my initial audition, two pieces and a song, you know the drill. And he asked me to come to Basingstoke for a recall at the Shrubbery, which was the ancestral home of the Burberrys, you know, the people who
made... I remember writing to the Shrubbery.
Yeah. So anyway, I did. He asked me to do the two pieces again and he directed me. And then he asked me for a song, which I did. And then he pulled out a side of Side with Rosie. And he said, just have a look at this. And he said, and just give it an airing. So I gave it a reading and...
I love that expression, give it an airing.
Yeah, just, you know, it wasn't like, you know, once you learn this and do it now. Just give it some breath, you know, just give it a try. And it's the bit where he is, where young Laurie Lee is with Rosie under the car drinking cider and leading to possibly his first intimate experience. And it ends with this beautiful line, which is, we kissed once only, so dry and shy, it was like two leaves colliding in midair.
Cider with Rosie by Laurie Lee. How beautiful.
Yeah. And that was my first pro job. I was playing young Laurie Lee in Side with Rosie. And when I got the job offer through officially through my agent, I then got a phone call from Ian to say, by the way, can you play the violin? No, I can't. Do you think you could learn three tunes in time for opening night? And this is sort of one, it's one of those experiences that really... It shapes you because you get pushed.
Yes.
I got assigned a violin teacher, a lady called Judith, who I saw a couple of years ago, actually. And she basically said, normally it takes about 2 years to do this, but...
we'll work with 3 weeks.
Let's give it a shot.
We open in 3 weeks.
So what can you do? Yeah, exactly. Tell me something really shocking. And I had a go. I had a good go at it. And some nights it might be a bit creaky, but some nights it was not too bad passable. But I do remember...
By the way, you're Tell Me Something Shocking is a John Gielgud story, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
It might be worth just positioning that. Do you want to tell us that story? Because that is funny.
I think it's Gielgud and they're doing Oedipus at the Old Vic. And he's a very bold young director, and Gielgud is quite an experienced old hand. And they're running a scene, and he comes to the front. He said, this is really boring, really boring. Come on, dig down, tell me something really shocking. And Gielgud just stepped forward and said, we open in 2 weeks.
Lovely. That's enough shock to... And actors thrive on deadlines. That's great. Sorry, that was a... Rabbit hole number two, please.
Let's just keep down that rabbit hole just for 1 second.
Sure.
The adjunct to that story is when he wanted Jocasta to impale herself on this plinth, and Gielgud was at the back and just said, which plinth? Plinth Philip or Plinth Charles?
Thank you for staying in that rabbit hole. Right.
Out that rabbit hole now, come on.
I heard the version a bit where John Gielgud was slightly irked or pissed off with the fact that they were fanning around doing lots of theatre games when he just wanted to get on with the play.
Yeah, anyway, absolutely, yeah. Sure. Yeah. So, yeah, I think because, look, I've really enjoyed the TV stuff that I've done. I've really enjoyed doing the commercials that I've shot. The live aspect of theatre, knowing that that moment is just completely individually cast in history.
Yes.
And you and the audience share that moment. For me, it's still really exciting. You know, that really does get the blood going. Every sense is alive. Every bit of you is switched on. I'm not saying that doesn't happen when you're doing TV and film, but of course there isn't the audience reaction.
Yes, absolutely. That's the thing. And very nice of Ian Mullins, because often actors are not cast if they can't play the instrument. It's all about the instrument.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah. I think it was also, Ian had a very simple directional style, which was more or less.
Can you do more?
He did actually say, he came to me after we'd sort of done a, and he used to give him...
Oh, that comes back to Oliver. Yeah.
And he said, you know, in this bit, it just needs a bit more. And I went, a bit more what? And he said, a bit more acting.
Yes. Be less...
Sometimes that's all you need. You know, yes. You just need to sort of, you know, dial it up a bit. That's all.
Lovely.
So parents, education, theatre and family. So, yeah, my family. So my wife, Lorraine, and my children, Grace and Tom.
How old are Grace and Tom?
Grace is 29 and Tom is 22. And they are my inspiration a lot of the time. And they are immensely supportive and incredibly loyal and strong. And it's not easy having a dad who is an actor who is sometimes away. But they are amazing. And I just thought I'd take this opportunity to say out loud that I love them very much.
Lovely. And have they gone into the creative arts themselves?
Grace is currently in Edinburgh. She did an acting degree at Falmouth. She's sort of, yeah, she's performing, she's doing stuff. Tom is currently at the University of Kent in Canterbury studying history. But he has been, he was a child actor. He did some TV and stuff. And my darling wife, we met at the Royal Shakespeare Company when she was a wiggy in the wig room.
A wiggy, yeah.
So she's a hair and makeup artist.
I think you'd already met her circa 1989, which is how long ago we worked together.
That's right, 87 we met. So,
yes. And I'm so happy that you've lasted the test of time.
Well, yes, it's not been easy.
You have not been easy to live, but no, I'm sure, yes, that's wonderful. Your family unit sounds absolutely glorious.
We're still here. I think that's one of the best things you can say, really.
Lovely. And now, three things that inspire you. If there's any overlap, that's obviously completely understandable, but three things that inspire you.
I know you said don't overthink it, so I didn't. And I was thinking, things that really inspire me. Mozart. Mozart, I find, if ever I'm in the car driving somewhere and I just need to kind of zen, a bit of Mozart, the CDs in the car, so bung one of those on. That's genius to me. The way that he articulates thoughts through music, just fantastic. And in fact, in league with that, are musicians. And I find watching people play live music, if you've had any sort of brush with it, you know how hard it is. Mm. A few years ago now, I did a play about Brahms, and we had a live violinist as part of the cast. So the first time we did this show for reals was we actually launched it in Adelaide in South Australia. And I had been randomly working with a Korean theatre company in Seoul. And at a dinner, I was introduced to this lovely woman. We were just chatting. And I said, what do you do? And she said, I'm a violinist. And we were looking for a violinist at the time.
You do.
do you mind me asking what standard you play at? And she said, concert, kind of quite matter-of-factly. So I kind of asked director and producer, and they said, oh yeah, she was taught by like the world's greatest violin teacher in Seoul, so yeah, she's actually pretty good. Aram, well, that is her name.
Say it again. Aram
came to Australia because South Korea and Australia have a kind of an extra work exchange thing. So
what was Aram's second name?
Min. Aram Min.
Love that. What a great name.
Yeah. Yeah, no, she's fab. So
did you say Adam Min, you're in?
No, but I wish I had. So it was just brilliant listening to her kind of like warming up every night. And then she would have to play a bit of the Brahms violin sonata. And I'm sure a lot of your listeners will know that piece, but it's beautiful, it's lyrical, it's devilishly hard to play.
And what's your favourite Mozart piece?
Oh gosh, that's really hard. No, it's the piece that's played in Amadeus, where Salieri describes it being like, it opens like a rusty squeeze box. And then there is this oboe that comes over the top, you know, it sails over the top of this, and it's just completely sort of, you know.
I love it when an oboe sails over the top, don't you?
Yeah, yeah. Indeed. And the other inspiring thing, look, we live in a world of inspiring people, and watching other people work is often inspiring. But I thought I would bung in athletes. Because when I was younger, I used to run, and, you know, I kind of ran distance. I used to run half marathons and stuff for charity. And that's a very freeing thing. But when you watch athletes at top level, the discipline and the amount of work they do and the headspace that they have to be in to deliver a world-class performance, I just find completely extraordinary. Mm. Yeah.
Lovely three inspirers.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
And now the squirrels. Two things. Oh, squirrels, borrowed from the film Up, where the dog goes, oh, squirrels, what are your monsters of distraction?
I love good news stories. And you don't see many of them about. But when you do see them, I kind of go, ah, brilliant. We should be having more of that. I've often thought we should have a good news channel rather than just a news channel. Why don't we just have a good news channel where we feature brilliant stories where people have done something fantastic and celebrate it?
That's a lovely idea in that. I love that. Beautiful.
All right. Listen, I'm a Sheffield Wednesday fan. So that is, if my team win or if there's anything about Wednesday in the news or whatever, it is a bit, what was that?
I love that. So your squirrels are related. It's good news and Sheffield Wednesday winning.
Yes, sort of. Although that doesn't often intertwine at the moment.
Yes, the legacy of sports fandom.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, you know, I've never been able to understand the people who can switch allegiance. My dad took me to see Wednesday play Manchester United in 1968. And we were sat above the players' tunnel, and I watched Bobby Charlton, Nobby Styles,
wow,
you know, Dennis Law, George Best, all kind of trot out. We beat them 5-4. And how could I ever support another team apart from Wednesday? I mean, you know, we've had a rough time of it since we got relegated from the Premiership in 99, but there is a lovely sort of connection of, you know, that's my team for better or worse, you know.
Yes, lovely. An anchor point for you all your life.
Yeah, yeah, it was a fantastic day. My dad and I walked back from the ground back into town, and we were being jostled. We were in a mad crowd and all that. And my dad didn't, he was sort of holding my hand to make sure I didn't get lost. But it was like walking on air, you know?
Yes.
Glorious.
Great squirrels that are related. I love that. And now, a quirky or unusual fact now is what the one stands for. A quirky or unusual fact about you, Nicholas Collett, we couldn't know until you tell us.
Okay. Well, some people will know this. Here's a quirky one for you. I kissed Jeff Goldblum.
we've all done. No, we haven't all done it. That was a lie. So just unpack that.
Well, I did a commercial for...
It won an award. It was called Laptop or something, wasn't it?
Yes, that's right. Yes. The Currys. And the premise of this is that people giving each other terrible presents for Christmas, and Jeff Goldblum comes in and uses acting to get around these awkward moments. I knew when I got the job that part of the script was that he takes on the character of my wife and pretends to sort of like this horrendous present that I've given her, which instead of a laptop is actually a jigsaw puzzle of baked beans. And he swaps glasses with her and thus swaps persona and basically then says, you know, how did you know? What a sensitive and lovely gift, and thank you, and I love you. And I just pile in and snog him.
Is he a good kisser?
But the director, a guy called David Shane, very mischievous, basically just said, kiss him twice, because he won't expect that. So I did. And it really just was a one take. You couldn't replicate it. And that's the one they use in the ad. But as Jeff pulls away, he looked at me as if to say, I don't know whether to beat you or laugh.
A perfect moment of spontaneity, if I may say.
Yeah, so there's the quirky for you.
Great. We have shaken your tree. Yeah. And now we're going to talk about alchemy and gold. When you're at purpose and in flow, Nicholas Collett, what are you absolutely happiest doing and what you're here to reveal to the world?
Yeah, well, doing it, basically. When I've just opened Metal, which is kind of like an extra layer to the stuff that I normally do, because it is quite personal in places. And my brother, who it kind of is in the show a little bit, my brother died in August.
Oh, gosh.
And so when I was opening the show in September, that grief was still real.
Wow.
So I really had to kind of use every ounce of technique, Ducky, as we know, little reference to Rudy Shelley, and really fully concentrate on delivering the performance.
And I'm so sorry about your brother, blimey.
No, look, you know, life is what it is. It's just one of those things. If anything, it just made me concentrate even more on making sure that I didn't muff it. So
yeah,
that's when I'm sort of in.
Yes, in flow.
In flow, yeah.
And now I'm going to award you with a cake, Nicholas Collett. So do you like cake, first of all?
I love cake. I love cake in all its many and varied forms.
I'm so sorry this is a virtual cake, but when we next meet, which I want to make a point of doing, I want to give you a cake. What cake would you like, please?
I'd like a Victoria sponge, please.
Victoria sponge is yours. Now you get to put a cherry on the cake with stuff like, what's a favourite inspirational quote that's always given you sucker and pulled you towards your future?
Okay. One inspirational thing that I really like is Amelia Earhart's quote, the best way to do it is to do it.
Perfect. Amelia Earhart, who went missing, but the only way to do it is to do it. She was the first, she flew across the Atlantic, didn't she? Or allegedly.
Quite extraordinary woman. Quite.
Yes.
Founded the 99, which was a group of inspirational women with the aim of inspiring young women to do what they wanted to do.
That is truly an inspirational quote about the action towards. It's always going to bring about change and progress.
Yeah.
The only way to do it is to do it. I love that. That resonates with all the other sort of type of work that I do as well in terms of coaching people to get clearer about what to do. So now, what's the best piece of advice you've ever been given, Nicholas Collett?
I was working in Jersey in 1986 and I was doing a version of Pinocchio. And the musical director was a guy called Gary Lloyd. Gary was a smashing character, very funny. And I remember having a chat with him somebody came and said, da-da-da, we're going to do this, but don't worry, it should be easy. And they left the room, and Gary looked at me and just said, nothing is easy.
The trick is to make it look easy, of course.
Well, yeah, but it really stuck with me, because when everybody is sort of coasting, that's when things screw up. Once you're over the line, then you can have a beer.
Once the oboe is flying overhead, then you can have your beer.
Yes. Let us salute the flying oboe.
I just did. And with the gift of hindsight, what notes, help or advice might you proffer to a younger version of yourself, actor, director, producer, writer, Nicholas Collett?
Oh, gosh. I'd probably say, if I was guilty of anything when I was younger, it was probably being a bit modest about stuff that I wish I'd actually sort of pushed myself a bit more. I mean, you know, we all do things in our own way, but yeah, I would have said to myself, don't worry, just do it.
Lovely. We're ramping up to Shakespeare shortly. So in a moment, we're going to borrow from the Seven Ages of Man speech, Jaques's As You Like It, to talk about legacy.
Yep.
But just before we do that, this is the pass the golden baton moment, please. So now you've experienced this from within, who would you most like to pass the golden baton along to in order to keep the golden thread of the storytelling going?
I'm going to pass it to my friend and colleague, Gavin Robertson.
How wonderful.
Gavin and I met in 2007. And we ended up working on something together, and we became friends, and we've worked together a lot. And I think it would be very interesting to hear Gavin's responses to these things. I think it'd be really good for your listeners to hear Gav's story, because it's very interesting.
Your mission, should you choose to accept it, is to furnish me with a warm introduction and warn him that I'm coming for him. That's lovely.
I will. I'll do that very thing.
And now, inspired by Shakespeare, all the world's stage and all the better withered billy players, how, when all is said and done, Nicholas Collett, would you most like to be remembered?
Well, I've always thought that if you are sort of remembered with some affection by your peers, that's the most important thing, to have been able to do a good job. I think that's as much as any of us could hope for, really, in this business of ours. Everything's so ephemeral and just disappears. You know, that night in the theatre, that was that moment in time, just then. You can't really capture it. You can't really film it. You had to be there. And if I've, you know, made somebody laugh or made them think or give them an enjoyable evening, then great.
I love that. He did a good job. And that, I don't doubt that legacy in terms of your family and being a dad and being a partner and all that, and your work, that legacy is secure, Nicholas Collett. That's really clear. We've just got to quickly mention, this is your website, but it's a lovely website and a testament to your wonderful versatility. Here comes another one. Ghost of a Smile in North Nibley, please. Where else can we find out all about you on the interweb in terms of other social media platforms?
Yeah, well, I'm on Facebook, Nicholas Collett Actor. On Twitter, it's Nicholas Collett Productions. Insta is Nicholas Collett. Yeah.
Nicholas Collett, Google that beautiful man and all will become clear.
I'm on all of those.
As this has been your moment in the sunshine in the Good Listening To show, Stories of Distinction and Genius, is there anything else you'd like to say, Nicholas Collett?
I thought I would share with you one of my favourite Shakespeare quotes. And it's from a particular favourite of mine, The Winter's Tale, which I did when I was at the Royal Shakespeare Company. And I produced in 1996 with the company I co-founded, Third Party. And I love The Winter's Tale because it's about redemption, which I think is kind of quite an underestimated quality. Because it takes a lot for forgiveness and to be able to move forward. And The Winter's Tale is quite a hard story. It's, you know, it's it shakes the foundations a bit. But at the end, there is a lovely moment where Paulina is revealing that the statue, supposedly, of Leontes' wife is actually her in real life. Leontes basically says, you know, what do I need to do for this miracle to happen? And Paulina says, it is required you do awake your faith. And there is something about that act of faith, and it's not necessarily in a religious context. It's about taking that first step. It's about holding the hand out, making the connection. And I really like that.
And just say it one more time with a deliberate act of reincorporation.
It is required you do awake your faith.
Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to the absolute delight that is Nicholas Collett, actor, writer, director, producer. So yes, thank you very much indeed for watching.
And good night.
You've been listening to The Good Listening To Show with me, Chris Grimes. If you'd like to be in the show too, or indeed gift an episode to capture the story of someone else with me as your host, then you can find out how, care of the series strands at the goodlisteningtoshow.com website. And one of these series strands is called Best of Bristol, Bristol Voices, helping to celebrate and amplify all the best of all the creative endeavours, the movers, the makers, the shakers and the mavericks, the influencers and the personal heroes, all from my hometown of Bristol in the United Kingdom. Best of Bristol, Bristol Voices episodes can also be filmed and recorded live in front of an audience of the creative entity's choice, as well as streaming to all the usual social media channels as we do so. So yes, get in touch if you'd like to find out more about Best of Bristol, Bristol Voices. Tune in next week for more stories from the clearing, and don't forget to subscribe and review wherever you get your podcasts.